raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Plantain, plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. Arsenal beat Tottenham again in a title race. This is not a Tottenham friendly podcast, not a Chelsea one either. We also beat Chelsea this week 5-0 as well, if you guys didn't see that. There's a pod out on that as well. There's highlights everywhere as well. I would recommend watching that on the Chelsea official YouTube because they're so salty and bitchy and crying, and we love it. But with that being said, I've got my two fantastic guests with me. Dean is currently having surgery done in his, nether regions. You know, we'll just leave it at that. But how are you guys doing?
I'm sorry. I was thinking like he's going for the Fabio groin surgery for the the comeback.
He's having a BBL.
I'm good. I'm feeling great. Mitch, it's happened again, so I'm feeling great.
Mitch, I tell you what. Mitch has been away doing white boy stuff, right? And I think this is your first Arsenal pod in what, 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, I didn't plan for that to be the case, but I was literally doing white guy shit because I was like golfing, and then I was like in Ohio, like probably skiing, like things that white people do. So yeah, lovely to be back. I've missed doing the Arsenal pod every week. I want to do the Arsenal pod every week, but sometimes the life of a white person just catches up to you, you know.
Because this man talking about skiing when it's almost summertime.
I have no rebuttal for that, honestly. Like, just white boy stuff. That's what it is. Speaking of white, we left the rest of North London red today. Arsenal, you know, went into the toilet bowl again this season. You know, we're in a title race. But generally speaking, guys, comparing how Arsenal went into that game. I know it was in January, but comparing how Arsenal went into that game last year and how we're going to the game this year, do you generally feel like there's any sort of, and this is for either one of you, but do you feel like there's any sort of similarities there? Because our form then in January was actually pretty damn good, and we've seen what we've done in April, minus, you know, an Emery, basically.
Gabby, you want to take this one?
Oh, no, I was going to say you can go first this time.
Yeah, sure, I'll take it. yeah, so, I mean, last April, we kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. This April, take Villa and Bayern out of here, and you know we've been, since the turn of the year, we've been the best team in the league. Mm-hmm. And there's an outlier, obviously, of the Aston Villa game, but like it's gonna be so disappointing if we don't win the league just because of how fucking good we've been. Like, there's no reason why we shouldn't be champions because every single metric points to us being the best team in the league throughout the entire season, not even just in 2024. And like, we have the best defensive record in the league, best goal difference. Like, we are the best team in the league, and it's gonna be really frustrating if we don't win the league. And it's so annoying to be behind City in this situation, but all we have to do is, we just need them to slip up once. We have points on the board. They have games in hand, but we have points on the board. This is the situation we want to be in. All we need is for them to slip up once, and we will be champions. And I think that we can do it.
Yeah.
Listen, I feel the same way.
Gabby, there's been talk about, you know, April, you know, and Arteta, and you know how he's got this. It's a perennial thing where he's shown that he bottles it and blah 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 because of number one, right? 21-22, we're going for the top four, right? 23-23, we're going for the league. To me, there's only one word for that That sounds like, to me, progress. Do you feel as if Arteta, you know, has tuned out all of that rubbish and said, guys, we're not fucking around anyway, we're here now, let's just make sure we win our games? I know Villa happened, kind of thing, but do you feel as if he was aware of that record, or he was just more of a, you know, it's business as usual, we need to win all our games regardless of the month?
Do I think he's aware of that record? Yeah. Arteta's a psychopath. He's aware of everything. Like, he's aware of everything. I know he was aware of that record, but do I think he cared about it? No. Yeah. I don't think he cared about it. There's one thing I wanted Arsenal to do before anything else. Like, one thing I wanted them to change from last season, or from the last two seasons, really. And they've done that this season. And the one thing was, like, don't lose in bunches. Mm. That's it. Just don't lose in bunches. Like, you have to be mentality monsters. And I think we've been that this season, especially in 2024. Yeah. Towards the start of the calendar year has been crazy for us. But we haven't been losing in bunches. When we lost that Villa game, you saw how the timeline was. The timeline was like losing their heads, like the title race is over, like capitulation, blah, blah, blah. I was like, take a breath, like relax. Everything has to have some context. Like, this season has not been like the last two seasons, and not just because we're playing better, but it just hasn't been. We don't have the same players. He specifically brought players in. Yeah. That were mentality monsters. Yeah. Let's be fucking for real. We brought a player in who has won a Champions League. Playing against like Chelsea on a Tuesday is not going to be his end all be all. Like,
just a regular Tuesday.
It's just a game. It's just a game. It's what it is. Just a game. Yeah. But yeah, I genuinely think Arteta was looking at it and like you have to listen to what he talks about in his post match like interviews, and he's just like, just take it game by game. And he's been saying that for the last two seasons. Yeah. Take it game by game. You guys have to keep your heads, because there's an element of naivete and like emotion that's in Arsenal, especially when we play at home. I see it when we play at home more than when we play away. But we've cut out a lot of that emotion this season. A lot of it. Like, just do the business. Don't play the badge. Just play the game. Like, that's it. And I think that came to pass, like, in the Chelsea game. But I think in that first half that today, you saw that today. We played the game, not the bad.
And do you know...
Second half.
Don't worry, the second half, probably going to spend the most time on that. But do you know, it's interesting you say, obviously, you just play the game. And, you know, like I said, I think after the Wolves game, you know, I feel as if a lot of the time, us as fans kind of make more of what the actual situation is rather than just watching it for what it is. And I feel like the players even exemplify that a lot more today. You know, we've all seen the game now, but there was a very much an air of maturity of the way we went about today. And dare I say, look, I've watched United as long as I've watched Arsenal. Basically, this particular performance reminded me of vintage United. Like, where one team, especially when they're playing against Arsenal, when both teams are really good, right? One team would have all of the play, all of the possession, look reasonably threatening, but in either box, they couldn't make the difference. They didn't take their chances. They didn't stop the chances, kind of thing. Do you feel as if that was a complete and utterly deliberate game plan? Or do you feel as if this was more of a, do you know what, we're going to play this game, play the game that's been given to us, basically, Mitch?
I more so just feel like we weren't as effective as usual in the first half. Effective is very much the wrong word, because we were very effective. We scored three goals. I don't think that we were as good as we typically are when we score three goals. And I think that just shows the amount of quality that we have. You brought up the example of older Man United, where, you know, they're not going to necessarily be the best team in between the boxes, but they will make you pay. And that's exactly what happened. You know, when a goal like Van de Ven's gets ruled out for offsides on something really narrow, it probably should have been 1-1 around that point, just based on how both teams were playing. And then we immediately go down the pitch and score. And it's like that kind of thing where it's like, yeah, we're going to make them pay for this. We're going to, oh, okay, that was a little bit of a wake-up call. Let's score. And we just like have that quality to do that. Yeah. And then you also have like a mismatch of Saka on Ben Davies. And that also helps Saka be able to score that goal. I don't know what the fuck he's doing forcing Saka onto his left foot. I clearly he didn't watch the tape, but I thank him for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much Zinchenko versus Salah at the M4. That's exactly what it was.
Why would you say that?
That's exactly what it was. But you know,
that's every defender against Robin. That's what it was.
But you know what? Actually, like in general, I feel as if we looked at the lineups, right? No changes at all. But Spurs brought in Højbjerg and Bentancur, basically. And obviously, they were playing a little bit deeper than Maddison. Do you think... And I know, and I, you know what I love? You know actually, what I actually love? Postecoglou is always talking about we'll scare the life out of them. We'll play our game, whatever, blah, blah, blah. He clearly accepted that, do you know what? If we let Odegaard, you know, have a party, we're in trouble. And he brought in Højbjerg. Gabby, do you feel as if that was a mismatch?
that wording, that was a layup for the alley-oop. Okay, listen, they thought this was a match. This was mismatch. Like this wasn't even Odegaard's best performance, and he was still like pretty good in that first half. Like genuinely, like we just were. Even if you were on Odegaard. You had five who was open, who was making like some really good passing in that first half. And we didn't have that much of the possession in that first half. They were on us from the jump. He thought that was a technical switch that was going to help a lot, but it didn't help as much as he thought at all.
I mean, look, I'll be very frank with you. I looked at our midfield and I just felt as if on our day, there isn't a better midfield in the league. The only other midfield that's as good, right? I wouldn't say necessarily better, but that's as good is obviously the Cheetahs, basically. But you've got everything you want in those midfield profiles. You know, the athleticism is there, the technical ability is through the roof, and there's goals as well. So I looked and then I compared it to Tottenham. It was like the only real out and out, you know, approach to top quality player there is Maddison. But Maddison was doing all this busy stuff, right, in between the lines, whatever. But there was no.
Was he? Because
that's the thing.
I wasn't paying attention to him the whole game. He was like anonymous.
Yeah, and that's why he got subbed off. But he was doing all this. He was doing all this busy stuff. But there was no real sort of, you know, there was no real final product. I don't know what minute was in the first half, basically. But I feel like Arsenal at some point, and Mitch, this is probably, you might have noticed, but Arsenal at some point in the first half just accepted that, you know what, these guys haven't really got anything for us. And we became a little bit more aggressive in our press and the way we were winning our duels, especially in the midfield. I don't know. Did you notice that? Or do you feel that there was another slight change there?
I did think it was like a very... if I was watching it as a neutral and didn't have like a horse in the race, it was a very entertaining game because it was two teams that really wanted to press high. Yeah. And I thought that Spurs did a good job of pressing high, especially in the first half, where there was definitely some moments that we were like a little bit it seemed like we were a little bit shaky in possession, but we're really good at playing out of a press. So like for the most part, it wasn't a huge thing. I think that we did step it up about halfway through. It was allowing us to win the ball higher and not have to like try to play out of the back because of how high and I think effective Spurs press was. We wanted to kind of try to win the ball higher, hitting longer balls to Kai and trying to win second balls instead of trying to play out of the back, which I feel like we did an effective job of when we had a midfield that was built to progress.
Yeah. I think, you know, you're absolutely spot on there, especially the fact that the midfield we put out there was essentially there to bait them in and then just say, do you know what, well, five is the most press resistant midfielder in the league, so you can press him all you like. He did lose the ball once, I want to say, in that first half.
Let me rewind there, because when the lineup came out, people were like, yeah, this is our best lineup, and I was like, there's only one person I'm worried about, and five in that midfield. If it's one thing Spurs are going to do, they're going to run at you. And the way that he was dwelling on the ball was pissing me off so bad.
It's part of the ruse as well, you know. Like, you know, you pass at the last second to make sure that they're as exposed as they can be. They're out of position as much as they can be. It gives your player that's receiving the ball that extra split second. And then top level,
The only thing, I agree, is that the only problem with that is that Xhaka did it so much better because he would dwell on the ball a little bit and then have, he would draw you in for the foul and get the foul every time. His body positioning was just much better. He, like, Five would be losing the ball and then they'd be spinning at us and I'd be like, why?
I think where he lost the ball in the first half was just genuinely very poor play from him. But, you know, we'll stick with you, Gabby. The goal, I'm going to be honest, I think it came a little bit against the run of play. But, you know, we speak about, you know, getting something when it's not going your way. This Arsenal team is so much better now than we was last season doing it. Did you sense that, you know, we get this first goal now, we're going to actually get a couple more? Like, how did you feel after seeing that first goal? And especially the manner it came about as well. Let's be honest, it was very fortunate.
So there is, I wish I remember who tweeted it. There was somebody who tweeted earlier when the lineup came out and they said, I feel like this game is going to be first goal wins. Whoever scores the first goal is going to win the game. And I agree. I agree with that. And there's not a lot of games like that. Like, I trust us to, like, even if we go behind, I trust us to get back into the game, but not a game like this. When we're playing in their house and it's a huge derby and they are not really playing for anything. Let's be real. They're not playing for fucking top four. I don't care what they say. They're playing to ruin our season and they failed, but that's not the point. I was like, whoever scores the first goal wins. And the fact that it was an own goal made it so much sweeter. Like, that was such a dangerous ball that they put into the box. And we haven't scored I don't think we've scored from a corner in a few.
I want to say maybe February.
I was gonna say it's been a couple weeks, at least over a month or two. So I was like, you know what, us scoring on a corner again, I love that. Bring back like set piece goals, FC. Yeah. And the fact that it went in off his head, I really wanted Tommy to score there because it was going to him. But then like it just went in anyway, and I was like, oh, I love that. Easy. Now you can settle the nerves because you got the first goal.
It's one of the way. Like the ball was so good, it was asked to be put in. And then not long after that, and do you know what? You guys obviously watch on a different broadcaster to me, but Gary Neville was wearing his lily whitest Tottenham shirt today. It was so obvious.
Don't worry, so is Lee Dixon.
Of course.
I was gonna say, not my legend.
He basically, for the entire game, he was basically just willing Tottenham to score. And there was talk about this penalty that Kulusevski should have had on Trossard. Both of you, I need your guys' genuine opinion of this. I don't think it was a penalty. Can you see a universe where that's given?
I am going to be honest. I think if Saka doesn't put the goal away, I think it gets put back and is a penalty.
Really?
I genuinely think that Saka scoring on the other end made it too controversial to make a penalty.
They were like, I'm not gonna bring it all the way back for that, sorry.
if Kai fucks up the pass in midfield or something and like Spurs get the ball again in midfield and or there's like a foul on the ensuing counterattack, I think VAR has a second look at it and I think that's a penalty, because I do think that it would be a soft one, but also tripping a guy in the box is pretty typically a penalty, so I can't hold a lot of ill will towards Spurs fans that feel hard done by that, because I think that's a penalty that, like...
That's my job. I can hold your ill will for you.
I was going to say, that we'll hold it for you.
Great. I'm thrilled to be on the other side of a controversy. It feels great where I'm just like, cry more. I don't know.
You know what it is? It's like, I watched it and I was like, that's soft. Like, if they would have given that, I would have felt aggrieved, just because it reminded me of the one that I don't want to say we gave away, but the one that we gave away, I think it was at Wolves, the David Luiz one. It literally put my head on Pluto. I was like, I know technically he hit him, but like, you see how, like, come on. It's not like he put his feet in front of him and he tripped over it. You know what I mean? He took three more steps and then fell. He fell in installments. Like, if you were going to dive, just dive.
Do you know what probably didn't help? Was the fact that Madison decided to be a fairy as well and just, you know, fly into the air for no reason, basically, as well. And so if we're talking turning points in that first half, that essentially, I wouldn't say won us the game, because we still scored one more goal after that. But the fact that we're able to isolate, and Arsenal, I think, probably the best team in the league at doing this, looking at a team's weakness and going for the jugular every time, and then getting our best or most deadliest player or players in those positions and make sure that we make them pay. Saka against any left back is a mismatch, first of all. Like, but against Davies, oh good lord, he's like the Eric Dyer of left backs, basically. And I knew personally that was a goal. The moment Saka's picked up there, I'm thinking he's getting inside and it's going into the back of the net. I was so confident. But more just on Saka himself, right? We saw Martinelli's run last season where, you know, he scored and assisted in a bunch of goals, basically in the running kind of thing. Saka hasn't really contributed that much so far, but he got an assist on Tuesday and he's got a goal and assist today. Do you think he probably carries on this run of form, Gabby, between now and the end of the season? Because I don't see him slowing up now. He's got a week of rest between now and the end of the season, like each game.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. I don't want to say he's going to absolutely do it, but I wouldn't be surprised if he did. Because Saka always scores and assists in bunches, genuinely. Like, he just, like, he groups it all together. And, even if he doesn't come out with GA, he plays well most of the time. It's rarely that he plays badly. But I think he's coming back into his own again. Like, he did an interview not too long ago. I think it was at the Chelsea game, where he was talking about how Arteta, like, when he was talking to Arteta, he just has to play, like, every game. Like, it's just what's going to be done. And he knows that top players have to play every game. Like, they just do. And he especially does, because we don't really have a backup for him. I love Reece Peace, but he's not a backup for Zaha. The disparity
is quite high. But I don't even want to call it a backup. Whatever the Saka replacement is, I'm going to throw this to you, Mitch. But whatever the Saka alternative is, they can't be a backup for me. They need to be essentially that, an alternative. Someone that we can play in place of Saka, but we're not going to have an essential drop-off. I feel like a good example of this is someone like Trossard. Trossard, in most people's eyes, was a backup. Now he's starting, what, 3 games in a row in a run-in for a title. That's the level that you need, you know, of players coming in where it's like, oh, we can start a front three today of Trossard, Jesus, and the Saka alternative. That's the level you need to get to. These are all great players already. Kind of, when the players come in, you shouldn't feel... I suppose, hindered by it. But yeah, go on, Mitch.
I've talked about this on the pod before, and I also wrote about it earlier in the season. I don't really think that's a player that exists, because there's not a player in the world that is as good as Bukayo Saka and is okay with not playing. Just not a player that exists. So, like, our Saka backup is players that can play in multiple positions, which is Trossard, which is Jesus, which is Martinelli, we've seen on the right, like Fabio Vieira has played on the right. Like, we have a lot of players that can fill in those positions, but we don't have a player that's going to play exactly like Bukayo Saka. And honestly, that's okay because there's not a lot of, like, that's kind of just not a possibility. You can't really have a player like Bukayo Saka playing behind Bukayo Saka. It's really not a thing. And if you look at it through the lens of, like, most superstars, there's not a one-to-one behind them because it doesn't exist. There's going to be a drop-off no matter what when you have one of the best players in the world. It's just the reality of the situation, unless it's a player that, like, plays somewhere else in the team. Like, when De Bruyne was out for most of the season, Foden moved into a different position and carried that burden, which is exactly, like, how we need to operate when Saka gets hurt. I mean, like, first City game this season, Saka didn't play, and we still won that game. Like, we had someone else come in. We have that load being able to be shifted throughout the front line. And reality is, it's not a position that, like, I don't think is a high priority where it's like, we need to sign a right winger because Saka needs to play less. Like, the only Arsenal fans want, like, don't want our best player to be playing as much as he does, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, well, you know, when you put it like that, it actually makes me laugh because end of the season comes now. It's like, oh, but he only scored this amount, only scored, only assisted that amount. It's like, the only way he's able to get numbers up is if he plays this amount of games. Do you know what I mean? He's not going to do it from the bench. He's not going to do it from watching it from his couch because he's being rested. I understand that load management is a thing and it's very, very important. But at the end of the day, every single top team that has top players, those players are getting, unfortunately, Gabby, what I say is, but they're getting used like bars of soap. I'm sorry, they are.
Oh my God. I told you, you're banned from.
There's a reason why KDB KDB has a huge scar on his hamstring, right? I'm not saying, I'm not wishing that for Saka, obviously, but when you're at that level and you can be that level of difference maker, you simply have to play as many games as possible. Now, yes, I agree.
Listen, as long... I was going to say, so I don't mean to cut you off, but like, as long as he's not used the way that like Jack Rochel was used and run down, then we're okay. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like you said, like Mitch said, load management. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people on the front line that can that shift over and do the job. Mm-hmm. And as long as we get the 3 points, I don't really care. Like, I don't really care. I only have one agenda, and that's for Kai Havertz. So
which you know, like, it's a great segue because he scored a goal, which was incredibly reminiscent of a Nicholas Bentner goal in a North London derby, but this was scored at the Emirates, where was a great ball in from Fabregas, and he's leaped high and everybody else and just planting it in the back of the net. That's all I could see. That to me was, and it turned out to be the winner, which I love again, but that to me was just a sign of a team that is, we're in kill mode now. Like, it's literally, you know, we're smelling blood, you know, they're there for the taking, and we're actually doing it. And it was so refreshing to see, because what happened in that first half against Chelsea, against a better side, we might not go into halftime winning that game, kind of thing. And the second half becomes a little bit more complicated. How relieved were you that, number one, that we got that third goal, but it was Havertz scoring that goal, Mitch?
I love...
You're going to get some, Gabby. I promise you're going to get some. You're going to get some.
No, I'm letting Mitch take this, because like, I'm going to be talking for a while.
Through to me, and she's like upset that I'm talking about Havertz.
Oh no, I have a sighing as in like this is a good time. Like, I can't wait to talk about it. Go on.
I fucking love Kai. I like it's so great to watch him like play this well. Like, I think he was the best player on the pitch today. His ball to Saka for that goal was fucking great. I mean, he had a lot of space. It wasn't exactly like a through ball, like through guys, but like it was a great ball nonetheless. Found Saka. Great assist for the goal. And then he used the fact that he was 6'5" and got up above everyone and put the ball in the back of the net, which is what you love to see. It was a just very simple header. I do want to give a call out to Ben White on these corners, because he's just such a little shit. Like, he doesn't do anything illegal. He just kind of stands in the way. Like, on the first one, he just like touches Vicario's glove and it rattles him enough to where he's just like not right. And it's great. And Kai gets up, scores that goal. I need him to like, it's so hit or miss on whether Kai's going to be like confident after scoring a goal. Cause sometimes he looks embarrassed about it. Today was one of those days where he kind of looked embarrassed about scoring a goal. He did shush the fans, but he still did kind of look a little embarrassed.
He's like a subdued, you know. All right.
After his goal against Chelsea, it was like, I'm that fucking guy. Like, the knee slide. Like,
he wanted them to hold that.
But it was awesome. Great goal.
Do you know what, though? It was actually funny because Gabriel actually encouraged him to do his celebration. He's like, he remembered. He's like, oh, yeah, I've got to do that as well, kind of thing. But look, 3-0, we're coasting. Listen, man, I'm relaxed as hell. I'm thinking, okay, cool. Second half, we'll probably get to about 55, 60 minutes and we'll see some changes, kind of thing. And we did, right? We saw Martin.
Real quick. Go on. I was feeling calm because we were up 3-0, but also in the back of my mind throughout the entire game was like, I'm not going to feel comfortable until we score 7 because it's the North London Derby and like literally anything.
I was saying the same thing.
That is not like a comment about how good Arsenal are or how good Spurs are. It's just like this fixture is cursed and something weird's going to happen. And something weird did happen, but it just wasn't fully detrimental. But I was fully like, yeah, they were saying like no one's ever come back from a 3-0 lead in the North London Derby. I'm like, this would be a day where they score 4.
Yeah, I was like, we need to score another one. Make it 4.
I thought the same, but this is why I felt that, you know what, we're showing a ruthless streak. There's more goals in this game for us. I mean, probably should have scored more actually, but I was very, very calm. And that second half started, I think we started that second half a lot better than we played in the first half. I feel like there was a lot more composure, and you know, the ball was moving really, really, really nicely. And then we made the Martinelli change. Gabby, do you feel as if that change was maybe a little bit too early, because the different profiles between Martinelli and Trossard. Number one, Trossard obviously offers great ball striking and movement, but also great control for us as well. just because of how well he keeps the ball. Do you feel as if we kind of surrendered a little bit of control there to get on Martinelli?
We did surrender a little bit of control. I always think Trossard is the first one up. I'm not Trossard. Sorry. I always think Martinelli is the first one up now that Trossard is starting. So I'm not, I don't know if it was too early, because I was thinking that maybe it's time to for Martinelli to come in, because just, you know, just to have that outlet. But it completely changed. It changed the game more than I thought it did. We really like started losing our like, I guess losing our composure a little bit. We just like, we're not holding on to the ball at all. We'd pass two times and then, you know, they'd have the ball back and they'd have, and they weren't doing much with it. You know what I mean? Like they weren't creating a lot of chances, but it was still annoying to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's probably merit in that, but also, maybe we have to accept that, look, as much as we cast Spurs, they've got a good coach and they've got some good players, kind of thing. Not Maddison included, by the way, because he got hooked not too long after or before that, I want to say. But the subs that did come on for Spurs, I actually feel as if helped them gain ascendancy. But we're going to have to talk about it now. Raya did something, guys. And I don't feel like I've forgiven him for it, only because we all watched that Southampton game last year. And that's all I could think of. Like, Mitch,
don't forget who was playing in that Southampton game. Don't forget who was playing in that game.
I know. But Mitch, two questions actually. How angry were you? And did you feel as if, do you know what, this is great, this is the weird shit I was talking about? Like, did you actually feel as if it was almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy from yourself that you felt was great, was inevitable to happen? Or did you feel as if it was just a stupid mistake?
Yeah, I felt like it was more just like a stupid mistake. The momentum fully shifted in the match when that happened. And I don't like momentum in against our favor with like 20 minutes to go in a North London derby. So I was like a little bit scared, but I don't think I had the head loss that you did when that happened. Because I was like, wow, that was quite the fuck up from Raya. We'll be okay though. And I gotta say, David Raya had a fucking excellent game outside of that one moment of being just an absolute moron. Like, it was a terrible pass. He mishits it, goes right to Romero. Fuck Romero, by the way.
Why was he up so far? I was so confused.
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know. But Raya had a great game outside of that. Like, especially after the error, he was, like, the box was his. Every single cross was in his hands. He's a very, very good goalkeeper. Like, one mistake does not change that. The fact that he is a very, very good goalkeeper.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason why I was so vexed. Because he was playing so well. So, so well. And then even after that, he was playing so well. So I think, so why would you sandwich all of this in between a complete and utter clusterfuck? What is wrong with you? Sorry, Gabby, go on.
No, I was going to say, unfortunately for us, Raya has downloaded the Arsenal gene where we shoot ourselves in the foot all the time. That I know I hate it, but that meme that's what goes on Twitter of the guy who's standing behind the other guy with the bar. That's literally us every time. I genuinely don't remember the last goal that we've conceded that was not like a mistake from us. Genuinely. Like, it just always seems to be like lapse of concentration, we're overplaying something, we just lose composure. It's very frustrating to watch, because if we cut those like individual mistakes out, we would have conceded way less than we did this year, and we already haven't conceded that many. So saying that, I think that we all know why Dapper Raya is in goal, not Ramsdale, because if Ramsdale, as much as I love him, he probably would have done that in the first 15 minutes. And that would have been the first goal we conceded rather than the, you know, whatever. But it just goes to show his mentality. Like I was saying earlier, mentality monsters, because him picking himself up and dusting himself off and like having a very good game after that mistake. Love that. And I wish he had saved that penalty, because he did die the white way, but it was
a good penalty, to be fair. But after that, prior to that going in, should I say, Gary Neville was just willing it. He was just like, you know, 3-0, you know, Arsenal in control, they haven't played that well, you know, but, you know, one goal goes and then becomes a little bit more complicated, blah, blah, blah. And it goes in and then all of a sudden he perks up. And it really, really annoyed, me, because it's like, he was right. He was actually right. A goal swung the momentum so much. But more than anything, it was more about Arsenal conceding territory. It was just very, very frustrating. So I suppose we'll go into the penalty, Mitch, but I was astounded at the fact that Mike Oliver didn't give it in the first place. And to me, that speaks volumes about just how bad the refereeing is or can be in this country. It's terrible. It's terrible. How can you not give that as a penalty, like, completely? Because if there's no VAR, we get away with that and probably win, like, 4-1, get another goal kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, I know, like, it's Tottenham or not, but that's bad. Because if that happens against us, right, my head is going all the way to Jupiter. How can you not, like, can you at least do me a favor? Can you mitigate for him how he has not given that penalty, basically?
Well, Rice gets all balls. He gets all two of them. And I think that, you know, it was a safe play. But I think also referees in the VAR era are more willing to wait on it, where it's like, I'm not 100% sure if that's a penalty or not, so I'm going to let them, I'm going to delegate to them, which I honestly think is the right thing to do. Because if he didn't get a good look at it and, like, they look at the replay and it's actually Declan Rice, like, missing him or, like, just hitting the edge of his foot or something and he, like, goes over like that, then it wasn't the right call. So I think delegating that is the right thing. That's the reason we have VAR, which is an objectively good thing.
Yeah.
I don't disagree, but on the other hand, I will say, I'll be the villain a little bit. That was 100% a penalty. I don't know how he didn't call it. I will say, though, I feel like the problem with the way that we look at the refs in the Premier League is that there's so much inconsistency. Yeah. There's so much inconsistency. I mean, like, if we think of I can't remember if it was the first half or not, but Kai had scored the offside goal. But they put up the flag, like, really fast. There's some times that we're watching City games or Liverpool games or whatever where they keep that flag down until the next play, like, genuinely. And I'm like, you're doing stuff like that. But then on the other hand, when that was absolutely a pen, he did not get any of the ball. You guys are like, play on, just whatever. And I was just like, we might have just got away with one. Like, I don't know how that just happened. It's like they don't want to make the decision, which I don't like. I feel like if you're a ref, you should have the balls to make the decision. And if you're wrong, then they'll tell you that you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like, that VAR is here to double check you or back you up. Yeah. They're not here to make the decision for you, which is what I think the English refs do a lot. Well,
I've said before, I would prefer if refs would be more bold and accept that, you know, VAR is going to, you know, give you a better angle. But the reason why and it would apply to any other game, but the reason why it upset me more was because it was so obvious. You shouldn't need VAR for that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you should legit should, like, there's some competitions. For example, I think in the lower round, in the early rounds of the Carling Cup, basically, there's no VAR, and especially at some grounds, there's no VAR. So a team could go out of a cup competition because there's no VAR because you've made a decision like that. And it's like, it's so obvious. Like, that's what really just grinded my gears. Yeah, it was stupid from Rice or whatever, but at the same time, it's like, How can you not give that? But look, after that, Arsenal obviously had to batten down the hatches kind of thing. But I don't really want to talk too much about the fact that we hung on it at the end. I kind of want to talk a little bit more about Arteta just in general, his view of this game and going forward. Do you think, had we not won this game today, David Raya is not getting that contract, basically? Because I personally think Arteta made the decision on Rambo solely based on that Southampton game. Like, I really think that was the moment for him where he's like, okay, I need something else. Had we dropped points today, and we could obviously attribute it to David Raya, unfortunately, do you think that puts another question mark in Arteta's head?
No, from what I understand, the Raya deal is all but complete. But it's a loan with an option to buy, but, like, from what I've understood and like, all reporting around it has been, is that it's just a deferred payment, basically, like, to help us with financial fair play or whatever it's called now. Like, I don't think we really have a choice. I think Raya's going to be our goalkeeper next year. Also, mistakes happen, and that is, like, a part of the, like, DNA of having a goalkeeper that plays out from the back is that they will do that. That, like, they are not perfect, and there's a higher risk that they will turn the ball over than, like, if a midfielder makes a bad pass, which midfielders do all the time, or center backs do all the time. Like, it players misplay passes all the time, but when a goalkeeper does it, it's a way bigger deal because they are the last man. But this, he's playing the way that Arteta wants him to play, and he responded in a way that Arteta wants him to respond. His head didn't drop. He's not going to go on a podcast this week and talk about how he's ADHD. he is our goalkeeper, and he will be for the foreseeable future. I don't know why it's so hard for people to like kind of understand that, but like he's 100% like our starting goalkeeper next season.
I mean, look,
I don't think.
So obviously, I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate here. But it, Gabby, we'll stay with you anyway. I haven't watched Arteta's. I haven't watched Arteta's post game like press conference and whatnot. But I personally think, from my perspective, Arteta has shown just how much of a great coach is, and how much he's learned. If you could probably criticize any decision he's made today, like, what would it be if there's one?
Decision that he's made today? Oh my God. I don't know if he made any bad decisions today. I personally probably would have taken off Partey in the latter stages of that game and put on Georgie. I think we only made two subs in that game, and one was Kivior for Odegaard, and the other one was Martinelli for Trossard. And I was like, the Odegaard one was odd. Not that he was playing like terribly or great. He was just, you know, pretty average. But I was like, taking off your captain in a moment where we need some calm is very interesting. And then I was like, we're doing like the the Rob Holding protocol with Kivior, which was like, I mean, I'm okay with us sitting back and like holding on to the lead, but I don't know if I like that at all. I was like, we need someone to like hold on to possession, because clearly we cannot hold on to it all, and we need to do that like now.
I disagree. I think it was like very pragmatic and exactly what we needed to do. It's not a thing that we've gone to very often this season, because it's not a situation we need to go into very often. I think last year we were winning the skin of our teeth a lot more often, where, oh, we're not able to control the ball to see out this game. Let's bring on Rob Holding. Let's have an extra defender. And that's what we did with Kivior today. And it was for 10 minutes. Like, it's not like Odegaard got hooked in the 60th minute to try to see out a lead. Right.
Those 10 minutes felt like a half an hour, though. That's what the problem was.
Can you tell me who did get hooked at 60 minutes, though, just for my records?
I think it was who the broadcast described as he was over a free kick as the magician. And I was like, I don't think James Maddison has ever been described as that.
Just another overrated player. Sorry, as you were, sorry.
Okay, cool. Got it. I thought it was a pragmatic approach, and obviously with the result, I think it was a good approach. We weren't really able to control possession all that well beforehand, so I don't know what was going to change after that if we had decided to keep Odegaard on. I think in that moment, bringing on someone like Kivior, going to a back five, and just like, okay, we're going to hunker down and we're going to see this out, because it's an away game. What's that called? White Hart Lane. Yeah. The Toilet Bowl. It was like every single time the ball went in the back of the net for Tottenham, that place lit the fuck up. My dad texted me, because I've made him into an Arsenal fan. It's awesome. He texted me. He's like, you turned it into a narrow win, but it was their Super Bowl. So it was okay. That's exactly right. It was their Super Bowl.
Absolutely was.
That's why the stadium was so like, it was an electric atmosphere every single time they put it in the back of the net when they had a chance to like potentially steal something from us at the end of the game. It was a like crazy atmosphere. The players are going for it. They wanted to do what Everton did to Liverpool. But Arteta made a pragmatic decision, brought Kivior on, and we were able to see it out. And I think it was a great choice.
I mean, in I suppose in slang terms, we say he made a business decision in regards to Kivior. But I kind of want to go back a little bit, just back to the third goal, because I enjoyed it. Not for the header was great, but how we played out from the back. We didn't do it enough consistently, but whenever we did play out from the back and we beat their press, they were just open all the time. And if I'm being honest, if I'm going to say that I do have a criticism about it, I kind of wish that he maybe empowered us a little bit more to that. Because whenever the option was to go long to Kai, we did, which is fine. I know it's a different way to play, but there was gaps there. There was absolute gaps there. And I feel as if had we done that a little bit more, we could have actually passed them a little bit into submission rather than them getting encouraged by the fact that we throw a percentage ball up to Kai Havertz and it might drop for him. It might not. But yeah, that would probably be my one criticism of it. But yeah, of Arteta today. But yeah, look, on to Bournemouth next week. I personally have stated that I feel as if Solanke is our two centre backs' probably biggest test this season. Obviously, there's Tony there. There was somebody else actually. Oh my gosh.
Ollie Watkins did pretty well.
That's exactly what? Who I was thinking of. I had first-hand experience of him. I understand very much. But yeah, so between Watkins and Solanke, I generally feel as if those two are the biggest tests our centre backs will face. They're fantastic strikers, absolutely unreal. But Gabby, look, we know what happened with Bournemouth last year. Do you feel as if there's any potential of that sort of thing happening next week? Eyes have closed.
They better not. I will tell the listener right now. Next week is my birthday.
It's your birthday.
So if they even decide to do some fucking bullshit like they did last year, I promise you, my head. Will
oh
be
my god.
I promise you that they better not do that nonsense. Don't do it, because Reese saved us last year, and I don't think we could play that game a million times and never recreate that, like genuinely. Like, don't do that. Just do the business and win the game.
That will forever, I think, be like one of my favorite Arsenal moments of all time.
Genuinely.
Like, it is, like that, last season, it did not end well, obviously. But, like, I think, I think this serves as an apt reminder of just, like, what is being a fan about? And it can't entirely be, like, it is not our jobs to like make decisions based on results or anything like that. We are purely here for the ride and the enjoyment. And last season, while it ended disappointing, was to this day the most fun I've ever had as an Arsenal fan. The Reece Nelson winner against Bournemouth is culmination in that, of just like the pure ecstasy of like competing for a title for the first time as I've witnessed as an Arsenal fan. And the amount of like fun performances and games that I can look back at last season and be like, wow, that was incredible. I was here during that, or I did this during that. Like the Bournemouth game, I got sent the recording for this podcast like a second after that goal went in. And I was just like out of breath the entire time recording that podcast and just like kind of just in a haze of disbelief. Like, I mean, I was probably blacked out on that podcast. I don't know what the hell I said.
I can't remember recording that podcast. Like, how about that?
Exactly. It didn't exist because we recorded it right after doing that. And to segue it into this season, guys, this Arsenal team is so good. This season has been so fucking fun. And like, there's so many games I could point to this season that have just been phenomenal. And if you choose to torture yourself based on like how the league table looks at the end of the season, go for it. I can't stop you of how you decide to be a fan. There will be, if we don't win the league this season, there will be doomers all over the timeline throughout the entire summer, and the mute and block button is completely free. Go ahead and use that, because if you are looking at seasons just like, if we don't win anything, then it was a whole waste of time, then there's no fucking point of being a sports fan, because there's only one team every single year that is going to be happy at the end of the season. And so if you choose to be miserable because of that, because your team isn't that team, then that's on you. You're not, I don't think you're enjoying sports in the correct way. There was a conversation this week about, oh, is Jurgen Klopp's time at Liverpool like a failure because of like, oh man, he only won one league title. He only won one Champions League. Holy shit. Like, that is just like such a granular and like horrible little way to look at sports. Like, if you ask Liverpool fans every day of the week, would you take this entire time of Klopp being at Liverpool, they will take it every single day, because it was like wonderful time for them. Even if they weren't winning a title, it was still just like a great time in their history and a great time to be a fan. And that's what it's about. If we don't win the title this year, we will win a title. Arsenal will win a title under Arteta, like 100%. That is not even a fucking question. So don't let the league table at the end of this season decide your happiness for the next 3 months. Granted, we are winning the league this year, So none of this speech mattered, and none of it.
He's singing with chess, and I respect it. I respect it, you know? I was sticking with my prediction at the beginning of the year. I said we'd come second. We'd come down to damn near the last day, but we wouldn't have enough to do it. And it's looking like it's going to happen. But we hit all our targets, or at least they hit all my targets for this year. You got to a quarterfinal of a Champions League tie. You know, unfortunately, got knocked out by Bayern Munich, and it is what it is. But, like, we were so close to winning that. Like, it was the margins for error are so small. And I genuinely can't – I'm excited for what's going to happen. I was excited last season. And when everybody was talking about how this is your only time to win it, you're never going to be here again, I was like, you must think that we're fucking Spurs or Leicester or whoever the fuck. But we ain't that, okay? We ain't that. So, I mean, there's a lot of upheaval in a lot of clubs, specifically in the Prem right now. There's a lot of upheaval in Chelsea. There's a lot of upheaval. The Spurs don't know where they're going. Like, Liverpool, like, are getting a new manager, so they don't know if they're going to be good or not next season. Like, a lot of changing of the guard for all of those people. The only two teams that look like they're set right now, like, they know exactly where they're going, and it's only up, is Manchester City and Arsenal. So I'm... What can I really complain about?
Is what it is. You guys, I 1,000% agree with everything that you said here, especially I'll come back to you, Gabby, but what Mitch mentioned about the way people look at football kind of thing nowadays, there's only one person to blame for that, and he's a piece of shit, no mark, and that's Jose Mourinho. There's literally only one person to blame for that. Genuinely, the way people view football now, it's not about enjoying your team or supporting your team, it's about self-gratification. That's what it's about, and he is the ultimate poster boy of self-gratification when it comes to football. A lot of the stuff that he's done in his career hasn't really been about the team. It's about how do I attain glory for myself. I mean, his first interview in England was, oh, I'm a European champion. And it's like, in my head, I was thinking, who did you win the Champions League with? Even though I watched that final, I knew it, but I was thinking, but who did you win it with? Because it's not just you kind of thing. And it's, you look at the fan discourse now today, it's, oh, I've got a Champions League, or I've got two Champions League kind of thing. It's like, well, no, your team does. The team that you chose to support, probably at the height of their success, basically, that's who you chose to support. They've won the Champions League. So, yeah, it's good for you. That's good. But, you know, you're not enjoying the sport if the only reason why you enjoy winning trophies is to shit on everybody else or to minimize other people's achievements. Because to highlight and say one Premier League title, to be the best team over 38 games is so hard. I can't even begin to quantify it because of how good everybody else is. You know, to get 2 years running 80 plus points is, again, absolutely ridiculous. You know, I've got nothing but praise for the boys and Arteta and Edu as well, to be honest, and Josh, to be honest. But yeah, look, I suppose if we're talking predictions, Gabby, I am with you in terms of us taking it to the last day. I said it literally maybe when I was in the States with the other fellas, I was like, we're going to take it to the last day of the season. I hope we blow them out of the water, but we won't. But I feel as if we're good enough to at least take it to the last day. And I don't know who's going to win the league. Deep down in my heart, I hope it's Arsenal. I pray it's Arsenal, but...
I hope I'm wrong, genuinely. I've never hoped to be wrong more.
What I'm saying. But the simple fact is, we're at the mercy of other Premier League teams. Here's the fucked up thing, or funny thing. We're hoping teams can hurt City, even though those teams couldn't hurt us, basically. Do you know what I'm saying? It's really
like,
we're hoping Tottenham can beat City, but we put three past them in 45 minutes. Do you know what I mean? It's really weird.
They took points off us earlier in the season. West Ham has taken points off us earlier in the season. They aren't playing cupcakes the rest of the way. Also, City's bogey team is Tottenham, which means they will put six past them at the Tottenham Stadium. They were talking on the broadcast about how Tottenham's never conceded in their new stadium against City in the league. They're going
to
hold
they
six.
They always seem to show up against them. But I just have a bad feeling that Tottenham, they're so fucking pussy that I just know they're going to roll over for them because they know what it means. If they pick up points against City, they know what it means. They know It means too much to them.
I'm looking more on the West Ham game. Because they don't like have a horse in the race where they really hate us. They maybe we just want to be a main character.
Look, West Ham are away to City. There's no way they're taking points off City on the last day of the season. And You know what, I don't even want to talk about City's fixtures too much, but if there is one, if there is one fixture we may have any sort of hope in, it's the Fulham one. But I'll leave it there in terms of talking about City's fixtures. I even feel disgusting talking about them. Ugh.
Listen, we don't care about the 1-1-5, okay?
Yeah, honestly. But look, Arsenal beat Tottenham again in North London Derby. It's very much business as usual. You know, they had the little fun where they, you know, they were in the, I wouldn't even call it ascendancy, where they had, they performed to a decent level where Arsenal were absolutely shit and may have finished above us on a couple of occasions. But now, normal service has resumed. We're at the top table in Europe. We're challenging for the league. And they're just doing whatever the fuck. So fuck Tottenham. Guys, last words on Tottenham before we get out of here.
I just want to say that I don't know if anybody knew, but we haven't won back-to-back North London Derby away at their ground since, I don't think before Arsene Wenger. I said I really did that.
No, we did it in, actually that's a latch, you know, we won the league in 03-04 and then won 5-4 in 04-05. So yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right, yeah.
Somebody put up a stat. Yeah, I'm right. So I was like, oh, I said I really did that shit. Like, that's crazy.
My last thing about Tottenham is that great win today. Great to beat them. But also, happy St. Tottenham's Day, everyone. The joyous holiday. Oh my God. Two straight years. We love that.
I love that.
Any Tottenham fans listen to this, or any Tottenham fans out there, anyway, look, you're not that. You never will be that. It's a pathetic existence that your club leads.
Any Tottenham fan that listens to this is a fucking sadist. Why the fuck would you listen to an Arsenal podcast? Like,
don't forget, you guys won the transfer window, though.
Go to Chelsea as well. I mean, everybody's been in the transfer window these days, you know, all these shitty teams. All right, guys. You know what's up, people?
Peace.
Ha!
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation. My plantation. My plantation. Plantation.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.